Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 2. Excuse me, text 32. Srinara Urvacha Evante Niminim Prista
Evante Nimina
Prista
Evante Nimina Prista
Vasudeva Mahatmanaha
Vasudeva Mahatmanaha
Pratipuja Bhuvan Pritya
Pratipuja
Dasadas Yatri Vijam Nripam Sri Narada Uvacha. Sri Narada said, Evam Das Te Dei Nimina by King Nimi Pristaha. Question. Vasudeva O Vasudeva Mahatma Tama, those best of saints, Pratipuja, offering him words of respect in return. Abhuvan, they spoke. Pritya, affectionately. Sasada Adasya, who accompanied by the members of the sacrificial assembly. Ritvijam, by the priests. Nripam, to the king. Translation. Srinarayana said, O Vasudeva, when Maharaj Nimi had thus inquired from the nine Yogendras about devotional service to the Lord, those best of saintly persons sincerely thanked the king for his questions and spoke to him with affection in the presence of the members of the sacrificial assembly and the Brahmana priests, purport by the devotees of Srila Prabhupada. According to Sridhar Swami, not only the king, but also the members of the assembly and the priests conducting the sacrifice were all devoted to hearing and chanting the glories of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The sages, beginning with Kavi, will now each give in turn answering the questions of the king. So we just go over to text 33 as well, and this is Kavi speaking. Sri Kavi Uvacha Mane Kutaschit Bayam Achutasya Param Bhuja Pasana Atra Nityam Udvigna Budhir Asad Atma Bhavad Vishatmana Yatra Nirvate Bi. And the translation for that verse is, Sri Kavi said, I now consider that one whose intelligence is constantly disturbed by the falsely identifying himself with the temporary material world can achieve real freedom from fear only by worshipping the lotus feet of the infallible Lord. In such a devotional service, all fear ceases entirely. Purport again. In the opinion of Srila Sridhar Swami, the word Asta Atma Bhavat in this verse indicates that the living entity is constantly disturbed by fear because he identifies his eternal self with the temporary material body and its paraphernalia. Similarly, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur stated, Bhakti Pratikula Dehi Gehad Bizvi Asat Kin. Because of one's attachment to one's temporary body and so-called home, family, friends and so on, one's intelligence is always disturbed by fear and one is unable to appreciate or practice pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So-called religious activities executed in the bodily conception of life are always accompanied by fear and anxiety about the ultimate result. But pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead frees one from fear and anxiety because it is executed on the platform of Vaikuntha, or the spiritual plane where there is no fear or anxiety. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the process of bhakti yoga is so powerful that even in the stage of sadhana bhakti, in which one practices devotional service through rules and regulations, the neophyte can have a direct experience of fearlessness by the mercy of the Lord. As one's devotional service becomes mature, the Lord reveals himself to the devotee, and all fear is totally vanquished forever. Every living entity has a natural propensity to serve God, but because of false identification with the temporary body, one loses touch with this pure constitutional propensity and instead inauspiciously becomes attached to temporary sense gratification in the form of body, home, family, and so on. The result of such false attachment is continuing distress, which can be eradicated only by devotional service to the Supreme Lord. In this connection, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has quoted the following verse. O my Lord, the people of the world are embarrassed by all material anxieties. They are always afraid. They are always trying to protect wealth, body, friends. They are filled with the lamentation and unlawful desires and paraphernalia, and they are avariciously based their understandings on perishable conceptions of I and mine. As long as they do not take shelter of your lotus feet, they are full of such anxieties. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Srimati Hridayananda Goswami Niti Namine. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravaya Pachani Nevasesha Srinivadi Pashacharya Chitarane. Shri Krishna Jaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So what a purport. Fear. It's a big, big issue in today's society. I don't know if any of you have listened to the news recently, but there's a worldwide fear that is going on at the present stage. And it's not to do with any war that we're having, it's not to do with any pestilence or any illness or disease that's going on, but it's the fear of economically falling to pieces. You know the old statement, as safe as houses or as safe as a bank? Well, in America at the moment, there's a complete collapse of the financial situation, which was always so rock solid. The American economy is so strong, it's such a powerful thing. Nothing can shake the American economy. Unfortunately, it's falling apart. And the ramifications of this is being felt all over the world. And the American government is having to bail out the banks, the so-called solid institutions of democracy, and they're having to bail them out to the tune of $700 billion of taxpayers' money. They're just going to have to fork it out because these ruthless bankers who have been so greedy and so envious and so manipulative that they've been draining the public of funds, and so their companies have now fallen into a heap. And what the result of that is, it's then structured a panic throughout the whole world because of all the financial institutions are linked to the American economy. And so here we have, even in Australia and all over the world, in Europe and in Asia, people are freaking out because they've been putting their superannuation policies, all their hard-earned savings, all their investments that are going to save them, protect them in their old age. You know that, oh yes, I've got my... There's this one advertisement on TV actually about a nest egg, and you see this couple that's got a small nest egg and someone's got a bigger nest egg and so on and so on. So their nest egg, and it's a big gold egg, you know, and they've got this tucked away in a bank somewhere, and their superannuation policy will kick in when they're 65 or 70, and then they can live a life free of fear and anxiety and just slowly drift off into old age in a very happy position. What's happened now is that by the fall of these banks, all that is in jeopardy.
Lots of people's superannuation policies are coming under dire stress. A lot of people are losing a lot of money. A lot of investors have lost money. So how to conquer this fear? You know, fear is everywhere. If we walk outside here, we see fear in every single thing, everywhere. The material world is just riddled with fear. To conquer fear, we have to take an action. Now, it's been said that fear is actually paper thin. The actual fear is itself is just a paper thin thing. And it's more imagining what can happen to us in a different predicament that is fear. There's nothing to fear except fear itself. When we imagine any sort of situation, you know, like say for example you go for a flight in an aeroplane, there's a fear. Because, why? You're imagining that the plane may fall down. If we're about to make a public speech or talk in public, what's the fear? Is it the fear of actually talking? No. The fear is that you're going to forget something and you're going to look like an ass. You know? Isn't it? That's what you're fearing. If you're giving a concert and you're ready there and the whole orchestra is there and everybody's there and it's your solo bit, Adam, and you go to play and you hit the wrong note, it's that fear of hitting the wrong note and being an embarrassment to everyone else, that's fear. So fear is actually very, very fleeting. There are many fears, phobias, violence. There's an incredible amount of fear at the moment of violence in today's society. People are fearing that. It's always been there, but apparently at the moment it's more and more. And how can you blame it? You know, I mean, if one just reads the newspaper, even kids going to school are not safe. We get one idiot that just decides to kill 10 people in Finland just by opening a gun and starting to shoot people at random. And people are wondering, how is this coming about? And actually fear is an intoxicant. People get hooked up on fear. It's actually something that people relish in one sense, because they can never get enough of it. Like horror movies and stuff are a very big attraction. You know, people really like to get that adrenaline pump. It's fear, but I'm not really fearful. It's just a movie, you know. And similarly, you know, you have these games, video games and that sort of thing, which promote violence and disturbance, you know, and it's sort of fearful. And so with this constant connection with fear in so many different ways, it's there in front of us that the materialist is constantly fearing everything, you know. He goes out, hops in a car, he's fearful that he might have an accident. Walks a lonely street at night time, he's fearful he might be, if he goes to Melbourne, if he's walking down the wrong streets of Melbourne, you know, he's fearful that, my God, I might be stabbed or I might be molested or so on. So a person's life is riddled with fear. And human life is not meant to be lived in such a fearful state. But because, as it says here in the purport, because of attachment to one's temporary body and so-called home, family and friends and so on, one's intelligence is always disturbed by fear because of that attachment. Oh, is something going to happen to my home? Is something going to happen to my family? At night time when they come home, quick, lock all the doors, shut the shutters down. You go to these new estates. And doors and locks on doors isn't enough anymore. They've got these screens which they pull down, you know, and the whole thing is like a case. Your house is like a case to say, lock in, now are we safe? Are we okay? Yes, no one can get in, now we're safe, now we can relax a little bit. There's no fear there, you know. Or you have the situation of illnesses, you know. People with a big fear, you know, cancer. Oh God, if I get cancer, what then? Gosh, you know, and people start fearing any little blemish or spot on their skin or whatever. Oh God, it's cancer, I'm finished. It's a fear, you know. Fear about what they take, you know, like at the moment again, there's another fear all over the world. Milk products that are coming from China are contaminated with this poison. So every milk product, the little babies that are having milk products, you know, it's contaminated with this poison and there are people that are dying. Young kids are dying in China and so on and so forth. So now everybody has banned milk products coming from China. Because of fear. So fear is rampant. And the greatest fear that somebody has, the greatest fear that we have, is the fear of dying. In the material world, the fear of dying is just like up there, right up there. So we're so frightened of dying. And the funny thing is, in our society, that this point of having this fear of dying or death or old age is disguised. You know, in the Eastern world, in the Asian world, it's not so much disguised. People know it's a natural function of life that we grow old and eventually we die, and that's treated with dignity and respect. But in the Western world, people are so fearful of their own death that they hide old age and disease and death away from the public. You don't see it. They're put away in these little nursing homes and stuff where you can't see a person deteriorating and dying. And when they die, well, we really didn't know much about them and they just fade away. But this fear of dying is actually a major thing. And when, as I mentioned once before, when I first came to Krishna consciousness, this was a fundamental point that brought me to Krishna consciousness. It brought me to Krishna consciousness to see people dying and understanding that actually this is going to happen to me. I have to do something about this to not allow this fear to overwhelm me like it's overwhelming these materials. And the only way we can do that is by becoming completely involved in devotional service. And understanding how to deal with this fear is by actually understanding our position in relationship to God. I was listening recently to a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles, and another fear that people had is fear of UFOs. You know, it's not such a big deal at the moment, but I just noticed there was another UFO sighting recently. But at one stage, especially in the 70s, there was this big thing about, you know, fear of UFOs. Are they friendly? Are they friend or foe? Are they here to drain our energy or are they here to give us knowledge? So anyway, one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, what about UFOs? Should we fear them?" And Prabhupada, are they good or bad? And Prabhupada said, "Satashyat, the frightfulness is due to unawareness of God." So fright or fear is due to unawareness of God. The more we are unaware of God, the more we are frightened. And the more fully conscious we are of God, the less we are frightened. So even, and then they said, "Yeah, but Prabhupada, what about death?" "Even death," Prabhupada said. "So what?" Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "I am death." So everything that's coming is Krishna. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj pips up in this talk. He says, "Yes, Prabhupada, just like Dhruva Maharaj, he was confronted by so many demons, so many enemies, and he had to fight them. But he was fearless in his fight against demons." And Prabhupada said, "Yes, that's right." Prabhupada said, "It's all a question of knowledge, of understanding, of seeing the world in its real self. If a person, say for example, and this has happened to all of us, obviously, living in Australia, if a person sometimes sees like a rope in a garden, they may think, 'Oh gosh, that's a snake.' Without knowledge, you would straight away develop a fear. But really, it's only a rope. Now, if you have knowledge, you say it's a rope, no fear." So that's what Prabhupada was making. So another analogy that he makes is like, say for example, if all the lights go out, we're fearful because we think, "Gosh, where is everything? I can't find my way." But if you know that everything is okay, and even with the lights out, still Krishna is in control, God is in control, everything is all right. So the whole thing is not to worry if we're completely surrendered and attached and aware of God being everything. This is what Prabhupada was saying. God is actually everything. Everything that's manifesting itself in this material world is Krishna. So what does Krishna say at the end of the Bhagavad Gita? First he says it in the first part of the Gita, right through the book, all the philosophies being taught. But the first thing he says to Arjuna, when Arjuna is perplexed in the second chapter, "What am I to do?" First he says, "Don't worry." First thing Krishna says is, "Don't worry. Don't do this fear thing." Second, and then he goes through the whole discourse of Bhagavad Gita, and there's so many wonderful things. And then the final thing that he says to Arjuna is, "Sarva dharma parijagya, mama kam saranam vaja, am tvam sapa papabhyo, moksha yishini, ma suchaha." You know, just you know, do not fear. Don't worry about it. Sarvadharma Parijagya. You know, just surrender unto me. You know, don't do the fear thing. Just surrender unto me. I'll take care of everything. You know, there's no repercussions, no karma, nothing. Just love me. Just, you know, surrender to me. But surrendering to Krishna means loving Krishna. Just surrender to me and I'll take care of everything. This is like Krishna's guarantee. You know? After you buy a car or something, you get a guarantee. We'll look after your car for 3 months, you know? Yeah? But Krishna says, if you just follow me, if you just listen to my instructions, if you just surrender to me, if you do this, you know, you'll have no fear. You don't do fear. So, don't hesitate. So if we do fear, the reaction is you'll get fear. Now, in the early days of Krishna consciousness, especially when you first come to Krishna consciousness, this is one of the most striking things that happens to us in devotional service. One of the most striking things is all of a sudden you become fearless. As it's saying here in the purport, the neophyte can have direct experience of fearlessness by the mercy of the Lord. The neophyte, the young devotee, when we first came to Krishna consciousness, there are so many things that we came, the baggage that we came with, the fears that we came with, you know, that were, you know, like, you never mention things, like your personal appearance, big fear. You okay? Something's happened. Little spider? Well, there's a fear. Arachnophobia! Well, the thing is, what are you going to do? He's going to kill you or something. Krishna is in the heart of that little spider and he won't hurt you. Caterpillar. So, in the early days of Krishna consciousness, we were fearless. You know, I mean, in our Sankirtan years, and we've all had these experiences where you actually astound yourself in your own capability of being fearless. Whereas before, as a non-devotee, you would never do the things that you would do. I remember we were doing Sankirtan, and marathons in particular, when you had an opportunity to really serve and really surrender. All the Sankirtan leaders and the temple president were saying, you have to surrender to Krishna Prabhu, just go out there and give the mercy. And so you do it, you know. And we would be doing Sankirtan. I remember one time I was with Gopinath Acharya, and he was fearless. This guy would do anything to encourage the non-devotee to engage in devotional service on the Vyasa Sukriti, you know. We would go in the heaviest places to try and sell paraphernalia to these people, you know. And this guy couldn't be stopped. He was so determined, so surrendered, you know. It was fun being with him. But I have to bail him out at times, you know. Like, he'd go to these pubs that are just like the roughest, you know, Hell's Angels, you name it, you know, like that, tats and everything. And he'd be trying to sell them these candles or paintings or something, you know. And they got no interest at all in any paraphernalia. But he'd be walking up to the bar and this big burly guy, you know, listen, I've got some paintings. And he would be so forceful that it would drive him mad, you know. So anyway, I would be doing one side of the street or the pub or whatever. And then I was thinking, where's Gopinath? Gosh, we were supposed to meet back here, you know. So I better go and look for him. So I went into the pub and gingerly opened the door. And there's Gopinath, this big Hell's Angel that's got him by the throat, up against the wall, you know. So I'm like this, you know. Oh, God, you know. So anyway, I had to go up to him. Excuse me, sir. He's my friend. He really doesn't know what he's doing. Please can he come with me, you know. So all these different things, you know. And one other time, which was really amazing, we would be selling this paraphernalia, and it'd be late at night, and it'd be at these clubs and discos in different towns, and there was a strict policy that you could never sell anything in these places, you know. So most people, out of fear of being bounced out by some heavy bouncer or something, would say, okay, you either here to that. Oh no. Not the devotees. The devotees are fearless. In we went, you know, and then the bouncer would come up, you can't sell those things here, mate. Yeah. Oh yeah, no worries, mate. And then we'd slip out And then when he wasn't looking, we'd go on all fours with a roll of paintings or some paraphernalia, a box full of candles, and we'd crawl on all fours in between all the tables where the patrons were sitting there drinking and having a party and all that. And from underneath the table, we'd look up and we'd say, excuse me, would you like to buy a painting? What? 6'5" guy crawling under a table with a painting, you know, like, and they would buy, you know, inspired by Krishna, because it was the marathon, they would say, yes, oh, okay, mate, how much, you know, and then we'd collect the money and roll up our roll and crawl under the table to the next table, you know. So the devotees would go to any lengths to surrender to Krishna to bring the Lakshmi back. They travel to all parts of the world.
Russia.
Huh?
Russia.
To Russia, to Africa. A friend of mine got locked up in a Nigerian jail. Was it Nigeria? Or Rhodesia at that stage, I think. Anyway, but no, Zambia.
Zambia.
It was a real backward sort of place, and it was like, oh, what are you doing that? And these guys, these white guys that stood out like anything, were shoved into prison, and they were fearful for, you know. Normally, you'd be absolutely, completely petrified. But they weren't, you know. They were doing Krishna's mission. They were on Sankirtan. Everything's okay. Krishna will look after us. So, it's an amazing thing when you think back of those early years. So Krishna inspires you to be fearless, you know, just by surrendering. So even in a neophyte stage. And Krishna says, I'll relieve you of all your sins, all the reactions. So we have to somehow really keep remembering that, you know, that he's going to take care of everything. We make so many little mistakes along the way in our devotional career, you know. We are subject to pride and so many different things. But Krishna says, all those little anartas, all those little unwanted things, I'll take care of them. Don't worry about that. Krishna is such a person. But we have to surrender. We have to surrender. And we have to sacrifice ourselves in the altar of love to Krishna. We have to surrender ourselves in the altar of love to Krishna. So as it says, Yasarvadama Purijakya Mamakam Saranam Vrayam. Saranam Raja. Saranam means surrender. Saranagati means to surrender. All the obstacles on the path to spiritual life, we have to surrender all the obstacles on the path. So anything that's favourable for Krishna consciousness, we accept. And anything that's not favourable to Krishna consciousness, we reject. And we have to have the courage and the fearlessness to be able to do that. That takes guts. That takes real stamina. That takes real courage. You know, to actually, for a young man, a young woman, to actually stand by the principles of devotional service takes real courage. So a devotee becomes courageous. And then the final thing is that Vraja, Saranam Vraja. That in that verse, that is a verb. The verb means go and surrender, be surrendered. But it also brings to mind Krishna and Krishna's homeland, Vraja. Vraja. Krishna's homeland, as it says here, by Kunta. Krishna's Krishna Loka. Which there is no anxiety, there is no fear. Love resolves all contradictions there, and all things are possible because it's centered on Krishna, because everything is focused on Krishna. So when we make Krishna the center of our life, there is no fear. We don't need to fear anything. We can go anywhere, we can do anything, we can achieve anything. We get for Krishna because we love Krishna, but we have to diligently love Krishna. The other point that I wanted to mention, and this is something that Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj used to make a lot of mention of. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was a very dear friend of ours, and in one of his books he mentions that we should also, in Western civilization, they have this thing about fear of God. You know, that's the ultimate fear, to fear God. And they actually see this as a good thing, to fear God. So I just wanted to read a little section from Spiritual Warrior, which is a really nice book to read. and where Maharaj is talking about fear of God. Many people believe that fear of God is a prerequisite for spiritual life. And you hear this a lot in the West, you know. You have to fear God. Are you a God-fearing person? A case in point is the reaction to an address made a few years ago by the president of Guam. Some say the result of my influence. To an assembly of priests, entrepreneurs and politicians, in his speech he mentioned that instead of fearing God, he was learning to love God. The churches condemned him roundly for his pronouncements, saying, "What kind of man is this? How can he be our president?" These religious leaders did not understand that a connection with the Lord can exist that is far deeper than fear. So this is actually in the Western religious structure. Fear is like, that's it. Oh, he's up there. We better do these things, you know, or else we'll get the fear of God. Children who fear their parents and teachers only behave properly under the threat of punishment. If the external pressure is removed, these children will do anything and everything. It is the same in our relationship with the Lord. An affiliation with God based on fear cannot be very strong. It remains on a superficial level, preventing us from developing the deeper understandings necessary for us to make true spiritual advancement. Fear prevents us from giving ourselves freely to developing deep connections with others. That's the other thing. Fear prevents us from developing a deep connection with others. Will they like me? Will they not like me? So on and so forth. Instead, if we direct our primary focus to avoiding unpleasant consequences, love, which is an expression of free will based upon appreciation and spontaneity, cannot thrive in such an environment. Unfortunately, many religious traditions operate on the basis of fear, worshipping a God who punishes violators of his law. So there are many, many laws in different religions. In the Christian religion and the Jewish religion, there's 10. You know, thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that. And thou shalt, you know, like, you can't do that, you can't do that. In the Muslim tradition, I think there's 83 commandments or something. You can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this. And if you do, woe betide you. It was really interesting. My wife brought this to our attention at one stage. Very back in the early days of Krishna consciousness, just to emphasise this point, we went to Vrindavan the first time, you know, and while we were in Vrindavan, my wife's father passed away, my father-in-law passed away. So when we came back, the family was there waiting for us, and they kept the old boy on ice for us, so we could be at the funeral, so my wife could be at the funeral. So he's a Catholic. And they had the service, the mass and everything. Now this is, Bhakti has just come back from Vrindavan, right? And they're so hung up about this fear of God. So Bhakti's there and she's trying to console her mum, doing the right thing, trying to console her mum. And in a certain part of the mass, you go to communion, where you receive a host. You know, it's like taking a little bit of prasadam. To be able to go to communion, you have to be without mortal sin. You have to be without mortal sin. Mortal sin is the big one, you know, a big sin. You have to be without the big sin. One of the things that is a mortal sin is that you have to, as a Catholic, you have to go to church every Sunday. If you don't, you're in a state of mortal sin. If you're in a state of mortal sin and you die, you go to hell eternally. Sorry about that. Missed out, you're going to hell. So, you know, God is such a nice father that I've made one little mistake and no, I'm sorry. That's it. Now, not just for a little while, but forever. You're doomed to hell, burn in hell forever. This is how good a father God the Father is. This is their conception. So anyway, Bhakti's sitting next to her mum and it's communion time and she says, the mother goes up for communion. So she wants to support her and she's walking her up the aisle and all that, because her husband has just died. And Bhakti says, well, I'll just have communion. So she has communion and goes and sits down. And the mother turns to her and says, you shouldn't have gone to communion. You're in a state of mortal sin. You know, she's just come back from Vrindavan. She's dedicated her life to service to God. She's bathed in the Ganges and the Jamuna. Her mother says, you're doomed to hell. You know, because, and she was fearful. Oh, you shouldn't have gone to communion. So this made it even worse. So this is the absolute ludicrousy of that, the fear of God. So, unfortunately, many traditions operate on the basis of fear, worshipping God who punishes violators of his law. Followers of such traditions expend their energies more avoiding chastisement than to express love. So they try to avoid any, you know, follow all the rules. No, I'm following all the rules. No, I haven't got any mortal sin. Have I got a mortal sin? No, I don't think I've got a mortal sin. And then if you have got a mortal sin, we better go to confession, because they've set up this other structure. This is like the relief valve, you know. If you have done a mortal sin, hang on a tick, I'll just go to confession and get rid of that one. Okay, now I'm straight again. Now I can't make a mistake, can't make a mistake, can't make a mistake, can't make a mistake. You know? Oh, I've made a mistake. Oh, God. Now I've got the rod of Damocles hanging over me. I'm going to be damned again. I'm going to hell again. Back to the confession and quickly confess my sin. Oh, great. So it's this constant expending of energy to avoid chastisement rather than to express their love for God. They don't know how to express their love for God. Yet fear plays a useful role in the early ages of development. We all know that as parents. We have to have a little bit of fear. A little bit of fear is actually a helpful thing. Fear can help us. When our children are growing up, you know, to avoid them completely becoming little monsters, you have to have a little bit of fear. And what we used to do was, luckily, because I'm a big man, I had a large voice. And Prabhupada says that you have to, you know, if your child does something wrong, you have to not chastise them severely, but you have to raise your voice and say, you did a wrong thing, Baba! You know, and the kid. And that, Prabhupada said, is okay. That's alright. And it says here, when children are young, parents must resort to rewards and punishment. Now, when he acts in the right way, then you say, Baba, you did a really good job. Thank you very much. At this initial level of dealing with authority, children are self-centered and motivated mainly by fear. Later, they begin to understand at a deeper level, saying, I love mummy, and I don't want to do that because it will bother her, it will disturb her. And daddy will be very unhappy if I do this. So that is the next rung up. As they mature, they learn to perform actions based on love. It is the same in our relationship with God. At first, we may fear him. We come from different religions and different paths, and we fear him. And often that's a necessary step, because at least we recognise his existence. So these traditions, these Christian, Judaic, Muslim traditions, they recognise God at least, and if they have a fearful relationship with God, at least there's something. Eventually we develop a broader understanding and discover that spiritual life is not merely a matter of rules and regulations, but of the soul's communion with the divine. The soul's communion, connection with the divine. So rules and regulations have to be there. You know? That's sadhana bhakti. We have to follow the rules and regulations. But principally, we do it not out of fear of God, but we want to actually develop a loving relationship with God. This will please our spiritual master. This will please Krishna by us doing that. So it's a development of love and devotion. Recently, yesterday was Ekadasi, and we had this lady come into Gopas. Bernadette can explain it better. She explained it to me. And this person was actually completely freaked out. I don't know. I've never seen her here in the temple, and for the life of me, she must belong to some other, you know, Vaishnava group or something. I don't know. But she came in and she said, is this all Ekadasi? I said, yeah. And she, Bernadette said, yes, yes, it's Ekadasi. Ekadasi prasadam. Oh, okay. And then she served her a plate and she got some really nice baked potatoes. And she said, would you like some sour cream sauce on it? Yeah, all right. What's in the sour cream? And Bernadette goes, sour cream. And she says, no, there's something in the sour cream. And so Bernadette goes to Braj in the kitchen and says, what's in the sour cream? What did Bhakta put in the sour cream? Salt and pepper. Salt and pepper. You can't put pepper in. It's a codicil. Now, maybe I'm 30 years as a devotee, I've never heard the connection, maybe some esoteric thing, it was the blood of something and da-da-da-da. I don't know, but I've never heard that on a codicil we can't have pepper. Has anybody heard that before? Yeah. And she said, but it's pepper. Yeah, but it's peppercorn. And corn is a grain. And I thought, peppercorn. You know, because at Gaudadesh we had pepper, and there's a pepper tree, and it's like a fruit. You know. But and she was fearful. And she said, no, I don't want it. And Bernadette had to take the plate away. Sure, no worries. Gave her some fresh potatoes. It was all prasadam prabhu, you know, it's okay, you know. But no, she was so fearful. So even in our tradition, even in the Vaishnava tradition, there can be little hang-ups where instead of doing things, like I said to Bernadette, we follow a codicil. Not necessarily that it's, oh, it's so sinful. You know, a codicil, you don't do that, it's sinful. No. We follow a codicil because we want to make advancement, we want to do something extra, we want to perform some little austerity. It's only a minor austerity, but we want to perform a little austerity for pleasing Krishna. To show Krishna, hey, I love you. I'm doing this for you, you know. So, yad karosi, yad anasi, yad didasi, didasi, everything I offer is done for you, Krishna. I'll perform any austerity for you. So anyway, this was an interesting sort of thing. So we have to, at times, we have to actually test ourselves. How much am I in anxiety? How much am I fearing? How much am I making progress? Now we have to understand that actually everything is Krishna. Everything. The good things that come to us and the bad things that come to us somehow or other are connected to Krishna. And we have to actually see that. We have to become aware of that. And we have to love that personality of Godhead. And that's the whole process of Krishna consciousness. Developing our love for Krishna and not fearing Him, but loving Him. And Krishna says, you know, don't worry about it. I'll take care of everything. All those little reactions and stuff that you did in the past, that's okay. It's all gone. Slate clean. Don't even worry about it. Just surrender unto me and I'll protect you. Don't do the fear trip. Don't even enter entertainment. So it's just a small veneer you have to burst through with action. You know? Like say for example, the grand final is coming up, right? And you see all these soldiers of the sporting world. And before they come out, they have this big banner, right? It's like made out of tissue paper and they burst through. That actually symbolises that point that I was making about symbolising they're breaking through the fear barrier and they're taking action. They're bursting through. We're going to win. You know? So this is us as well. We have to see the fear in our different capacities, in our lives. We still have to analyse ourselves. We have to test ourselves. You know, am I still fearful? Am I still holding on to different fears in my life? Can I break through this fear barrier by taking action in service to Krishna? By surrendering, saranagati, by actually going for it. And every day Krishna tests us in different way how we can overcome this fear. You know? Can you have the courage to get up early in the morning? You know? Can you have the courage to battle through any illnesses? Can you have the courage to go and do sankirtana? You know? It's not always easy. The mind will give you so much turmoil, so much stress, so much, puts up so many barriers, you know. Oh yeah, you can't go out on sankirtan, it's too wet. You know, the last time you went out on sankirtan, you got abused. Why don't you just stay here, you know? But we have to actually be very, very diligent. And especially tackling fear when it comes to presenting Krishna consciousness. Because that's our family business. That's what pleases Krishna the most. That's what pleases Srila Prabhupada the most, by actually going and presenting Krishna consciousness to the fallen conditioned souls who are nothing but riddled with fear. And we know when we come to Krishna consciousness, again, a lot of fear is eradicated very quickly. So we want to give that to other people. So we have to burst through this this fear, and especially in presenting Krishna consciousness. We have to be courageous in presenting Krishna consciousness. We have to put our fears to one side and just go for it, you know? Just really go for it and present God consciousness and a love for God in the most dynamic way we can possibly do it. Srila Prabhupada, as I mentioned in the last class about the Jaladutta, when he travelled, you know, at an elderly age, he went on this boat trip, you know, fearless. Okay, heart attacks may come. Don't care. I'm going to keep on going. He landed at Boston and he didn't know which way to go. Shall I go this way or shall I go that way? He says that. Shall I go right or shall I go left? He said, but I'm fearless because I have my books. I'll go anywhere Krishna tells me to go. So a devotee has to be like that, completely abhaya. You know, completely fearless and going forward and with confidence and present Krishna consciousness. So we have to check that fear in ourselves on a daily basis, you know, and act in our Krishna consciousness only as a means of getting to love and surrender to Krishna more and more. So I'll stop here if anybody has any comments or questions at all. No? Good.
Yeah. Like Prabhupada mentioned, he had such two severe heart attacks on the boat.
Yeah.
And he himself wrote that if he had his third one, he would definitely die.
Yeah.
Krishna came and massaged his chest.
And then the water was still, but he surrendered to Krishna.
Completely.
Yeah. Again, what I was mentioning, you know, when you see fear really in action is at the time of death. And I've had the opportunity to see both a Krishna conscious person passing away and also a non-Krishna conscious person passing away. Before I was a devotee, I worked in that retirement village, that retirement home, nursing home. And when you see older people passing away, it's a very, very sobering experience. Because the fear that they're experiencing is hellish. It's like hell on earth. You know, we had one little old lady who could be your mother or your grandma, and she was so riddled with fear. And I was doing cleaning in this youth in this hostel, and she was so riddled with fear that they would have to strap her in with one of those straight jackets. This old lady, 85 years old, because she would be going crawling up the wall with fear, and I'd be in there and I'd say, "Are you okay?" She said, "They're coming for me. They're coming." I said, "Who's coming?" "The demons. The demons are coming for me." You know? So she was riddled with fear. And it happens so often, you know? And it's only their fear that brings that into fruition. If a person is fearful all their life and their consciousness is based on fear and they perform activities which again result in more fear, because that's how the law of karma works. You know, if you're an incredibly good person, you get good results. But if you're an incredibly bad person, you get bad results. That's the way the law of nature works. It's not God, that's the law of nature. And that's how you're working, your consciousness. If you're instilling fear in people, or living entities, then that fear is going to come back to you. And that's what's described in the fifth canto. You know, that the hellish planets a manifestation of your fears and the reactions of what you've done. And so it comes back to haunt you, you know? And so these people are really frightened. But then I had the opportunity to see a Vaishnava pass away. And it's completely sublime. Completely relaxed, completely ecstatic, surrendered, just giving themselves and loving Krishna. And Krishna's welcoming back. It was an ecstatic experience to see. So the two, you know, is very interesting. So we have nothing to fear of fear. We just should full-heartedly, with full enthusiasm, go forward and present Krishna consciousness in a fearless state. And all good will come for you. And Krishna says, don't fear, I'll look after you. Everything will be all right. Yes, Prabhu?
The devotee thinks that I'm going to meet my darling.
Yeah. But even in our relationship, as it says here, you know, because of attachment to one's temporary body and so-called home, family and friends, we still have home, we still have friends, we still have family, but we're attached in a different way Because, you know, it's not a material thing. We don't care so much whether we've got a house here. But our friends in Krishna consciousness, we know we're never going to be separated from them. Krishna tells us in the spiritual world we'll all be together. You know? In our real body, in our spiritual body. And it's a connection on spirit, on consciousness, you know. So the devotee doesn't fear at all. And that's one of the first things, you know. And we shouldn't be disturbed by it. But when it comes up in us, we can see it in different times. We check ourselves and say, why am I fearing this situation? And how can I overcome that situation? You know? Like I had one person say they had to do an offering and were completely frightened because they didn't know how to cook. And I said, Prabhu, it's not that hard, really. It's nothing to be frightened of. No, I just don't know how to cook. I've never cooked. And, you know, I don't want to botch it up. And that's nice that they want. So I said, well, conquer that fear by finding out how to do it properly. And it's just a series of steps and you'll be able to accomplish it. So with my help, we went through the different preparations and we did it like that. See, that's easy to do. You just turn on the ghee, you mix it like that, you roll the puri like this, and you just press it, and boom, puffs up. Now you do it. Oh, I don't know. Roll it. I puffed up. Broke through the barrier of fear. And that person is now cooking. You know, and cooking and making nice offerings for Krishna. So you have to break through the barrier. There's so many different things, you know. Oh, I can never give up my attachment to a particular thing. Yes, you can. Just find out it's only a flimsy veneer. This fear is a flimsy veneer of our imagination, and we've got to break through it. You know? And with courage and true enthusiasm, we can do it. Because we want to serve and love Krishna. That's the vital thing. We want to serve and love Krishna. Yes, Prabhu?
When you're talking about two kinds of fear, first the fear of one of like a faith, I guess, that we don't have enough trust in Krishna that, you know, things will kind of grow. And then also there's a fear of surrender, which is basically also caused by a lack of faith. So one is rather, like, I try to understand that in fact, so one is just like a lack of faith in our abilities to perform things in worship service, the other one is to come close to the Christian because we have this type of faith that we don't know what will be happening. Is that correct?
Yeah, in a sense, yeah. Yeah.
What you're saying actually about Islam exchange with old lady, I heard some accompaniment was talking about it, but as far as I heard the even terminology in the hospital, they call it a terminal restlessness. And there was this theory, I think I heard from a nurse that actually that something now would be just appearing before this
change. Yeah, yeah. When I was in this lady's room, it was really like that. And I was a young bhakta, and I was just reading about that, you know, and it was like, this was a living Bhagavatam class, you know, this woman was actually experiencing it, you know. And like Ajahn, you know, it was like that description, she was, you know, she was really fearful. So it was actually happening, and I was thinking, wow, this is amazing, you know. And I could only relieve her by chanting Hare Krishna, you know, and getting through that. But, you know, Krishna is so wonderful because he says, you know, throughout the scriptures, as soon as someone just opens their heart a little bit to me, I mean genuinely opens their heart a little bit to me, all these hellish situations, I'll put a stop to it. It's okay. You know? Don't fear. You just have to open your heart a little bit. So even a neophyte will have that. You know? So we have to really become convinced of this, and when we become a little bit convinced about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and when we start to experience a little bit of love for Krishna, all we can do, all we want to do, is pass it on to somebody else as quickly as possible. And we'll do anything. We'll be courageous in any way, shape or form, you know, to do that. So my voice is coping out. Yes, Prabhu?
Hare Krishna, when they unite for Prabhupada, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Sori, Shruti Kirti, they told us the experience how Prabhupada taught them everything.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada told us everything. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.